Today is Friday, November 1st, 2019. This is part three of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Mike and Muriel Kanan, K-A-N-A-N. My name is Tom Martin. And for the record, part two interview was terminated when the disc in the recorder became full. And so Mike and Muriel, how are you today?
Great. We're great. It's a beautiful November 1st day in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Wonderful, wonderful. May I have your permission to record this oral history interview over the phone?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, again, I apologize for not paying attention to the memory card becoming full. And we were a little over 20 minutes into the part two interview. You both were talking about a wonderful way that you had taken your two faiths and tied them together in a relationship that you both shared and set out some ways to make that happen so that you both could be strong in your faith and yet strong in your relationship. I just found that wonderful. You had mentioned that you were both very active in the Democratic Party and that you had a chance to meet President Clinton, Vice President Gore at the South Rim. And then that President Walkup had approached you to help you with a young couple who was trying to work through some of the same things that you had. We had talked about you going back to Grand Canyon, back to the North Rim in the summer of 1962 and how much you liked that. So can you pick this story up again? Sort of transitioning from how you both worked out your relationship together and how that worked with the Democratic Party, how you sort of worked these things and then President Walkup.
Well, when we decided we would get married, actually at not really the, without really the, we had permission, of course, both of our parents, sets of parents supported us, but both said their advice would be that we would probably be more successful if we met someone of our own faith. But we decided we could do it, and we did. And one of the things we did was we worked out a scale. I believe I mentioned that earlier, and so I will reiterate that.
Please.
A scale from 1 to 10, 1 being if there was an activity or an event, a function, or some kind of that necessitated one of us to go to a church function, we would invite the other person or at least let them know what the situation was, and that person could decide, Mike could decide or I could decide whether or not I wanted to go with him or he wanted to go with me at a pretty low level, a 1. But if it worked up into a 7 or an 8, especially up into a 10, then the other person had to be excited about it and be just as, almost act like it was their idea we were going.
Nice.
And would be perfectly comfortable at the event knowing that we were both there willingly and supporting one another. And we worked out all the in-betweens over the years and applied that to many things, actually. Kind of a sense of love and respect for each other and the situation and for other people we would be interacting with. We did have an understanding before we were married that any children we raised would go with Muriel to the Mormon church mm-hmm. services and follow the Mormon church policies, which would be our son, our older of the two children, did serve a 2-year mission in Guayaquil, Ecuador.
Okay.
After a year in college, and then came home, and he had gone down to the University of Arizona and went up to Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah for graduation. And then on to Penn State for master's and doctoral degrees. And he teaches here at Western, which is why when we retired, we came here.
Nice.
To be with him. And we found that we both were Democrats and active Democrats because we both believe and have that we share the same values of, yeah, we're supposed to help everybody every way we can.
Uh-huh. Nice.
And the walk-up story, it was his nephew who was dating a Mormon girl, and he wanted us to visit with them and talk with him about the experiences we had trying to work out coming from two different faiths because she was Mormon and he was Catholic.
Nice. And this is President
Lawrence Walkup.
Northern Arizona University.
Correct.
Wow.
Yes.
Fun.
And then over the years, probably two or three other couples, but from different, not necessarily from NAU, but from friends or associates that we knew that had either children or friends who had children who would come and talk with us about things you have to think about and be aware of.
That's really wonderful to help the next generation with the issues that you process through. It's really neat. So you were married in the winter of 1962,
mm-hmm.
And then how was it that you decided, I think we touched upon this, to come back to the canyon that summer of 62 as newlyweds now?
Right.
Yes.
Because after we would finish our semester in the spring, neither of us had commitments for the summer. We loved the Grand Canyon. It was a good way to make money. We had sure jobs, and we thought it would just be fun to go back as a married couple.
Okay.
And it was. And,
nice.
And the people who came back who knew us before we were married would, you know, and knew us then as Mike and Muriel and then as Mike and Muriel Canaan were just delighted. It was fun.
Nice.
It was a nice place to spend a honeymoon.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, all summer long.
All summer long, it was.
Nice.
Because right after we were married, we took the train back to Iowa City, and that was an overnight trip on a 27-hour trip on the train, and then back to school the next day, so that wasn't much of a honeymoon.
So you kind of delayed that for a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Wonderful. Then what else do you recall about that summer of 1962?
It was just everything we had expected. It was wonderful. There was, we both loved our jobs. I loved waitressing. I was back there with friends, and Mike loved playing the organ, and we continued to play and sing and enjoy.
Okay.
We had friends come out and visit us from different parts of the country who wanted to come see what the Grand Canyon was like.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I cut you off, Mike. What were you going to say?
No.
Go ahead.
I don't.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something. Sorry.
Okay. No worries. And then you had met Dick Hingson, H-I-N-G-S-O-N.
I met Dick in 59, my first summer there.
Right. And then Mike would have met him in 60.
In 60.
In 1960.
In 60. So now as you come back as newlyweds in 62, clearly not going to be housed in the dorm. Where were you housed? How did that work out? And how did Dick end up being across the wall from you?
Well, I had a cabin in 61.
Okay.
And so then the two of us had a cabin in 62.
All right.
And I think Dick Hingson ended up on the other half. It was one of those sharing shower cabins.
Wait, wasn't it 108?
Can't remember.
Okay.
But it was...
I think Dick came to us and said, what would you think about sharing a cabin? I can be on one side and you guys on the other.
Did he?
I think that's how it happened. We said we'd love it.
Okay. Nice. Nice, because by 62, he was managing the front desk.
Right.
Yeah.
He was a busboy in 59.
Right, and he went from busboy
to managing
to
the desk.
Yeah, I think he spent actually one summer. Was he washing dishes?
Probably.
I can't remember. Yeah,
but, I can't either.
Yeah.
And then I think he ended up being like assistant manager or something, didn't he, Mike? Our next summer in 63.
I can't remember that. Either.
In 63.
I think that's right. And then went off to Zion for a summer. And that story. So. What stories do you remember about Dick Hingson and across the door there at the cabin?
Well, just how easy it worked.
Mm-hmm.
There was never seemed to be an issue where we all wanted the bathroom at the same time, or we made noise, or didn't feel like our privacy was invaded. There was never anything like that. And,
nice.
And Dick's always fun to talk to. He's a very interesting person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we would find times we'd just open up the door between the two cabins and we'd visit late at night. And
fun.
Then off to bed we'd go, and we got acquainted, you know, about our childhoods and how we all ended up at the Grand Canyon. And his story's wonderful about his father and being a doctor and the train wreck and all that got him the work, a job at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, yeah. Wonderful. What else do you remember about that summer of 62? Any particular events that come to mind?
The summer of 63 is when they had the huge rain, right?
That
was our last summer there.
The summer, yes.
Yeah.
The summer of 63 was quite different, but the summer of 62, I don't have any particular memory.
No, other than just good. I know one summer there was in the wilderness somewhere, and everyone worried a little bit, would we have to evacuate, but it all worked out.
Sorry, there was a fire, is that right? I missed that.
One of those summers, either 62 or 63,
mm-hmm.
there was a summer or a fire back up toward the Jacob Lake area.
Okay.
And the fear was that the fire would cross the road and we wouldn't be able to get out.
Right.
So we were kind of on alert, but the fire either burned out or was put out or didn't become a problem, so
okay.
we never evacuated.
Okay. One of the things, go ahead.
Well, we had been in 1963 when we went back. We had just been back to the lodge probably 2 or 3 days when my mother had a stroke and was dying. So we immediately rode the wood truck back into Cedar City. And flew back to Kansas City.
Well, flew from Cedar City to Salt Lake City, and then from Salt Lake City to Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah.
And went, attended her funeral and stayed. We were there for about 2 or 3 weeks, weren't we?
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
And then we came back to the canyon.
Got back about the 1st of July.
Okay. All right.
But the summer of 62 was just a wonderful, fulfilling, happy, good money-earning summer.
Okay, good. I wanted to ask you a couple details about that I'd been pondering about the North Rim operations in general. And one was the laundry. I know I'd already asked you about this, about the laundry, because every day you generate a large amount of sheets and pillowcases and towels.
Yeah.
And did you have a washing service there on site? Or not?
No. It was all sent by truck
okay. To
Cedar City.
All right.
It'd all be gathered up in big bundles and taken back to the linen cabin where all the linens were kept, the towels and the sheets. And then the truck would pull up and load up all the old laundry, and another truck would come up and unload the clean laundry.
Okay. All right. That makes perfect sense, and I would assume...
And the commissary truck that would come in every day with food
okay.
for the kitchen. And
right.
I'm sure supplies for the curios shop.
Yeah.
And the, campground.
Campground, yeah.
Okay.
The inn.
All right. So in the... You're trying to work out schedules between when the North Rim... closed and your schooling started for the fall semester in 62. Did that all work out okay?
It always worked out then because the North Rim closed on Labor Day.
Okay.
And
bulk of the employees
that gave
left.
Us time to get back to school.
By train.
Okay.
We'd take the bus into Cedar City and get on the train up to Salt Lake City. We spent 2 or 3 days with my family and friends.
Great.
And then take the train back to Iowa City.
Nice.
Or Kansas City, depending. And then drive. Yeah, could we drive? After we got married, we took the train to Kansas City because we'd leave our car at Mike's parents' home.
Okay. That worked out well. Nice.
Yes.
And then in 62, that summer, were there any visitors to the North Rim that you might have connected with, or any other employees that you might have connected with that year, besides Dick, that you might recall some stories about?
Well, we had a couple from Chillicothe. That's where I was from. Came out in the summer of 62. And
so did John and Marcia from Iowa City.
Oh, that's right.
Two different couples came out to visit us.
But we went in their car out on very rough road to Point Sublime.
Oh, wow.
And had quite a nice visit out of there. But when we were ready to leave to come back, leave the Point Sublime area, they couldn't get the car into any gear.
Oh.
To move, and I was starting to get a little nervous because Muriel had the day off, but I never had a day off, so that meant I was supposed to be back for dinner. And then I think the husband got down and looked under the car and found a rock had wedged its way in one of the rods underneath the car. And he knocked that rock out, and the car went into gear, and we went back.
Wow, lucky. Gosh.
It was lucky, yeah.
Huh.
They actually were out there visiting us and visiting friends of their family who ran a lodge and kind of a resort, but very small resort, in southern Utah.
More like a trading post.
Yeah, was a trading post up on the Utah-Arizona line.
Okay.
Goulding was their name,
Goulding,
I think.
Goulding, that's right. Goulding Trading Post.
It was the Goulding Trading Post.
So that's out in Monument Valley then.
That's correct.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay. Nice. So they knew the Goulding family?
Yes.
Oh, fun. Okay. So that must have been fun to have friends come and do some exploration in the area and look around.
Yeah, it was.
Nice. So then back 62 in the fall, back to schooling again?
Yes.
And Mike, you're working on a master's in sociology, is that right?
That's right.
And Muriel, you're going to be finishing your degree in education?
Yes, I finished that in 63.
Okay. In the spring of 63?
Actually, it would have been when it went over Christmas. I graduated in 64. On January 17th, 64, because the semesters went through the winter holiday.
Okay.
And started teaching school the next day, almost.
Okay. All right. So again, go through the spring of 1963 in school. And again, thinking, going to go right back to the North Rim. Is that kind of how things were going? Except Mike, your mother wasn't well. Or no,
she was.
She
as
was.
As far as we knew, yeah.
Okay. And how old was she at the time? Do you remember?
56.
Wow. So she
was. It was a massive stroke, and she died within days after having it.
Oh my gosh. She's very young.
Yeah.
But we left Iowa City. She had come up to help us pack things up.
Okay.
And the three of us drove back to Iowa to Chillicothe,
Missouri,
and then they took us. My folks took us to the train in Kansas City, and we went back out to the North Rim.
And then when we left at the end of the summer of '62, our intention was to return in '63.
Yeah,
we committed to,
okay,
to the Park Service that yes, our plan was for both of us to return. And I went back as a waitress, Mike, of course, back to play the organ. But the last half of the summer, toward the end, about the last month, I wanted to just see what it was like to work at the desk.
Oh.
So I stopped waitressing and worked at the desk.
That must have been a large cut in pay for you.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah. Well, I'm just.
But my career, it would be fun. I wanted that experience.
Ah.
And it was fun. I did prefer waitressing.
Okay.
But it was fun to be on the desk and greet people and assign them their rooms or hand them their keys or whatever.
So Dick explained this to me, and I'd like to get it from you as well. How did that system work with the keys, and there was a board, and can you explain all that, how that worked?
There was just a board with the little hooks on it, and all the keys had a little, about 3-inch size plastic hangers, and the number of the cabin was on it.
Okay.
And it corresponded with the number on the board where they hung. And most people had reservations. So when they came in and they would tell you who they were, and you'd look in the reservation book, and it would say whether it was a deluxe cabin or a standard and what number.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would welcome them and have them sign in and issue them their key. And a bellhop would be standing there and would help them with their luggage if they wanted.
Uh-huh.
And or take them, show them where the cabins were.
Okay. And did you answer the phone as well? Did you take reservations?
I didn't.
Okay.
I did not. If the phone rang, someone was trained for all of that, and I really wasn't.
Okay.
There was a switchboard behind mm-hmm. the desk mm-hmm. that connected the phones in the deluxe cabins. And
The standard cabins didn't have phones, but the deluxe cabins did.
And the curio shop and
the
kitchen,
soda fountain,
and the kitchen,
yeah,
and
kitchen,
so on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a person trained to work the switchboard would work the switchboard.
Oh, and there was a phone down in each of the dorms.
Okay. So a trained person ran that switchboard.
Right.
All
Did
right.
they, or was it just somebody behind the desk?
No, I think it was a trained person, but I know I wasn't trained and I didn't run it. So Dick would certainly understand all of that.
Yeah,
right.
That.
Anything Dick said would probably be right to the.
So I'm wondering, in that you shared in 62, you shared a cabin, one side and the other side with Dick, and he was working the front desk. Was he instrumental in getting you to consider coming to the front desk for a little bit?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Well. Because Dick was essentially managing the front desk, was he encouraging and instrumental in getting you to consider coming on over and giving it a try?
I don't know.
I don't remember either.
Okay.
If you worked the desk,
uh-huh.
then you also ate in the dining room.
Oh.
And not in the kitchen with the others.
So that there was a table next to the doors going into the kitchen from the dining room.
Okay.
That seated
called the staff table.
Six people, I guess.
All right.
And it was called the staff table. And when so the manager and the assistant manager and the people who worked on the desk,
the organist.
And the organist.
Okay.
Got to go down and eat at the staff table. And
during the regular dining room
hours.
Yeah,
during the dining room hours.
Okay. And so who was managing and who was the assistant manager at the time? Do you remember them?
Well, Lamar Snyder was the manager during my first 2 years, I think. He was the manager the whole four years, my whole time. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, all 5 years, he was the manager.
An assistant manager was Ray Bayless at the end, and also DeGraw.
DeGraw. Yeah.
It was Tom DeGraw, wasn't that his name?
I think so. And there was also a tall.
And his wife. Gail
Snyder
ran the post office during the early years, but I thought DeGraw's wife ran the post office one of those years.
Yeah, I think so too. And what was the name of the people who, he was the chef and she was a curio? And they bought that little restaurant up in Provo. Shoot, Rolly's.
I'll think of it. But not now.
So Ray Bayless, is this of the Bayless store chain?
No, it's not. He was from Kanab and
okay.
from Utah. And the Bayless store chain in Arizona, was headquartered in Phoenix.
Right.
Same name, though.
Okay.
For sure. Spelled the same.
And Tom DeGraw, that's DeGraw?
I believe so.
Yeah, but I think Tom wasn't his first name now that I hear you say
it
that way.
Yeah.
Okay. And Dick talked about Lamar Snyder as a very intelligent and demanding, but certainly cover your back kind of boss. Meaning,
oh yeah, he was.
If you worked hard for him, he would work hard for you, and really try to bring out the best in people. Is that how you recall
him?
That
was our experience.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there were never any negative issues with him and us.
Nice.
Or any I ever heard anyone ever express.
Uh-huh. And Ray Bayless is a new name to me. What do you remember about Ray?
Nice. Just kind of followed in Lamar's footsteps that he was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
He felt like he was definitely in charge and nice looking and pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Ray. Mike, who did I sing with? It was the
Jack Crowley.
Yeah, Jack Crowley was the assistant manager my first year and your first year.
And my first year.
In 59 and 60, Jack Crowley was the assistant manager.
Okay.
And we liked him a lot, too.
And he had a friend, Roger Shepherd, that was that worked as a wood boy, gathering wood and putting wood on the porches of the deluxe cabins.
Uh-huh.
And he had a car, so that one time in 1960, probably four or five of us, Roger Shepherd, Jack Crowley, and me, and probably two other people, went in that car over to Lee's Ferry.
Wow.
And just built a campfire on the beach of the river there.
Uh-huh.
And then and took along beer and other things like that.
And that was pre-Glen Canyon Dam.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
And then we got back, I don't know, probably 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. But that was a memorable trip in my head. From having that summer.
Well,
and
gosh, I'm going to interrupt here and say, Mike, it was a night off for you. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not absolutely sure it was a night off.
You might have left after your
We
new...
might have left after 8.
That would have made sense. Okay.
Yeah. It might have been, but I didn't take nights. There was nobody to replace me.
Yeah, the only time he didn't play is when the organ wasn't there. He was expected to play.
And that the 3 weeks when my mother died, there was a waitress named Kay Pridey. Actually, she started out working as one of the cabin maids, but ended up being a waitress, I think.
She was.
And she liked playing the organ and played the piano a lot. And so those 3 weeks I was gone, she played the organ, and then we didn't, that was in the summer of 1963, and then we didn't go back in 1964, so she was the lodge dining room organist for 1964, at least that long.
How do you spell her last name, Kay Pridey?
P-R-I-D-E-Y, I think she spelled.
No,
Pridey? Wait, what was it?
I don't know. Pridday, maybe.
Okay.
She was from Provo, Utah, and she lived down the street from me.
Okay.
I cannot remember how they spelled their name.
Well, it's interesting that she would have been making, again, good money as a waitress, But then when you left, she came in 64 and took that job. So
Yes. She knew we were not coming back, and that I think that arrangement was all made before we left.
Okay, all right. What do you remember about Kay?
Wonderful, talented, sweet.
Yeah, she was a delight.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So you mentioned some rain in 1963.
We had become pretty good friends with the Wranglers, whose desk was just across from the main desk where people would set up their arrangements for mule trips down the canyon, the trail and back. And they liked Mike a lot, especially. And they just said, you know what, this is a kind of a going-away gift for you guys at the end of the summer when it's time for everything to shut down. We will, gift you with a trip down by mule without charge, and we'll just show you all the neat things that you've heard us talk about these years.
Well, fun.
And we were very excited about it. And the night, the day, the afternoon and the night before we were supposed to leave the next day, help me with this, Mike. I think we got either 18 inches of rain.
Wow.
A huge storm came in and just washed away everything.
Wow.
Washed away the trails, took out the water system at Ribbon Falls. And I think it was a few years before it was all fixed.
Yeah.
And so, consequently, trip canceled.
Yeah. Gosh. Huh.
I can tell you a couple of things because I have found the listing. Kay Pridey, her last name was Priday.
Thank you.
Pridey. Okay.
And at least if this is... the thing I'm looking at is somebody named Quentin Bradley. Have you come across him?
I don't believe so.
He worked after we left, probably 64, 65, 66, somewhere in there, and lives, I think, in Texas or California, and he put together a North Rim reunion.
Ah.
Back in... when was that? 2013, somewhere like that. And he put out a list of employees that they had information on.
Okay.
And I noticed that's how that list is spelling Pridey, Priday.
Okay.
And the list is spelling Ray Bayless, Bayles.
Okay.
Which is different, I think, than the grocery store.
That's right.
And, we went to that reunion, and several people we knew did, and people were there who had worked at the North Rim of the Grand Canyon in the 30s.
Oh, my gosh. Wonderful.
Yeah. And there was a song called Grand Canyon Lullaby that somebody who used to work there in the late 40s or the 50s wrote. And I remember hearing it while we worked there, but just because somebody was there that knew it, I guess, well enough to sing it.
Mm.
And then when we ran into this couple, Pauline Child was her name, that worked there in 47 and 48, I think. And when she was working there, her name was Pauline, O-M-E-R, Omer. And she's married to Andy Childs. I guess this list is showing it with an S. And they live in Salt Lake City. And so we had a nice visit while we were there with them because that meant they were 10 years older than we were.
Right.
Or a little more than that, probably. And then after we got back to Bowling Green, he sent me the copy
of the Grand Canyon Lullaby.
Of the Grand Canyon Lullaby.
Fun.
And I have come across now a card that Kay Pridey put on the table while she was doing the organ.
Okay.
And it is K-A-Y-E, and it is P-R-I-D-A-Y. She's from American Fork.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, then she was. They had lived down the street from me before they moved to American Fork.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Nice. Okay. Very helpful. And it's interesting, I remember the year, I believe it was 63... Was it in the later in the fall? There were a series of rain events that caused much. That was
additional damage.
Additional damage. That.
Yeah.
1963 was a big water year there for that area.
Yeah. Yes. That storm in November, I think, of 1963 washed out the water line that took water from. Roaring Springs,
right
to the South Rim,
right. And so this is interesting because I didn't realize that there were storms before that November storm that would have primed the pump, if you will,
yes,
to get the land to start moving.
Right.
You know, I am slightly confused, and I may just be confused on this. I had thought the ride that Muriel and I were going to take was not in 63. That was with these two friends that mm-hmm. visited us from Missouri.
No, that was the horses. This was the 63, the end
it
of
was.
The summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Friends came out earlier in that summer, in 63. Additional friends, not the ones that we talked about earlier. And we rented horses and went horseback riding. But... The mule trip was supposed to happen at the end of the summer.
Okay.
And couldn't because of the rain.
All right. So was 1963 then the last year you worked there?
Right.
Yes.
And we knew we wouldn't be coming back.
Okay. And yet you ended up living in Flagstaff.
That was our goal. As Mike finished up his doctorate and was looking for a position, our goal was to, if there was any chance we could end up in Arizona, we wanted to. And we were lucky, Tom, because when Mike was interviewing, hiring was happening everywhere.
Okay.
And he interviewed at Ball State and a place in Florida and a place in Missouri, and in fact had just about accepted a position in Missouri because nothing happened. They hired somebody else in Flagstaff.
Okay.
And at the very last minute, we'd already gone down to Springfield, Missouri, and looked at a home. And Mike was about to sign a contract. The next day, we got a phone call late that afternoon, and from who did call you, Mike? Dr. Wright? The dean?
No, Ed Ribnicek.
Oh, Ed Ribnicek, vice president. No,
he was the chairman.
Ed called you? Okay, he was the chairman of the sociology department and said a person they had hired at the last minute had changed his mind or her mind, and was Mike interested? And Mike said, "Well, I'm about to sign a contract here. I'd like to come out and look at the university."
Uh-huh.
And so they flew him out. I think, did you leave like the next day?
Yeah.
And flew out to Phoenix. And did Ed
flew out to Flagstaff.
Did you fly right to Flagstaff?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, you don't ever go right to Flagstaff.
But, yeah, but from Phoenix
right.
to Flagstaff.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And when he got to the campus, he called me to tell me he had made it safely, of course, and he said the ride up from Phoenix to Flagstaff was enough to sell you on the job.
No, I'm not sure about that. I can't remember. Back in those days, there was regular service between Phoenix and Denver that had a stop in Flagstaff and a stop in Winslow.
Oh, okay.
And a stop in Farmington, New Mexico, and Durango, Colorado, Alamosa, Colorado, and then Denver.
Wow, up and down and up and down.
It was up and down, up and down, and I'm not sure I didn't come in that way.
I don't think you did.
Maybe not.
You took that trip when you flew back to Iowa City later. I think, as I remember, there was a phone call where you said, just coming up from Phoenix, up that Copper Canyon.
That might be.
Was
enough
to sell you.
Was that the first time either one of you had been to Flagstaff?
No. We had taken a trip from the north rim of the Grand Canyon to Flagstaff when we were dating.
Yes.
With a group. We had a car and...
somebody else was driving.
And we drove over to the south rim and went through Flagstaff.
Yeah.
And that would have been 60...
The summer of 62.
Okay.
No, 61.
61,
I think that was.
Yeah, we weren't married yet.
What do you remember about Flagstaff in 1961?
Pretty rural.
What struck me was how narrow the roads were. What I remember particularly was San Francisco Street between Santa Fe, or isn't that Santa Fe Avenue?
Yeah.
And Aspen.
Okay.
That road seemed so narrow. And now it's a one-way, is it? I think
it is.
And there's a little drugstore on the corner, Rowan's. Was it called Rowan's?
On LaRue Street corner.
Yeah. Because we stopped there and got sundries.
Oh, yeah, we did. That's right. That's where Collins Pub used to be. Is it still there?
I'm not much of a pub guy. I'll just say, yeah, I think so. Actually, on LaRue and Santa Fe?
On right across the street from the train depot.
Yeah. There's
on the corner of LaRue and
there's a brew pub in there.
And we commented that we thought Flagstaff was a pretty little town.
Nice.
And that was one of the reasons Mike wanted to fly out and visit the campus and be sure that was where he wanted, where we would be happy.
When you went out there in 61, do you remember where you stayed?
Oh, no, we just drove through. We drove from the south rim down through town.
Yeah.
We were only in town probably an hour.
Oh, my, okay.
And drove back to the north rim.
Oh, so this was on your rim-to-rim hike?
No, this was all in the car.
Yeah, it was just, we took a couple of days and did it.
So did you drive all the way around, so sort of Vegas and Kingman and then over to the south rim?
No, came down through Cameron.
Okay.
But I'm trying to remember, could that have been in 61? The reason I think it might have been 61 is because, again, I didn't ever have days off.
Okay.
So, but I had those two or three weeks off.
Waiting for the organ to be
returned. When the organ was broken.
Yep.
Yeah, it might have been 61. I could have been right.
That's, I think, because it was in 61 that we also had the time off to go make those two movies.
Okay. So that would make sense in 61. And then, so if you had a car, you could have driven certainly, you know, down Highway 89 and across the Navajo Bridge.
That's what we did, right.
And Glen Canyon Dam would have been under construction at Page. The bridge over the Colorado River at the dam site would have been completed by 61. And then you would...
Yes, I think that's right. I think that...
Yes, because my parents came down to visit us in 61, and we drove to Page.
Okay.
And had lunch there and drove over that dam.
Right.
Yeah, and I remember taking some pictures of it. They just had... the very basic bottom part of the dam.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There was just one concrete truck after another all along 89, like something you'd see in a movie, like a caravan carrying concrete.
Yep.
From Flagstaff to the Glen Canyon.
The Clarkdale concrete plant was operating then, and they were.
Is that right?
They were running cement from there. They were running gravel from. North of Flagstaff, I believe. You're right. The truck traffic was day and night. They're on the road. So,
and we were very sad to see them building that dam.
Okay.
Because you had had that wonderful experience at Lee's Ferry.
Yeah, but Lee's Ferry was still there.
I know, but we just thought that would change so many things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And when was that that you were offered the job to come back to Flagstaff?
In 1967,
Okay.
in March.
Wow, well, that must have been quite the turnaround, just about ready to take a job like the next day, and then suddenly finding yourself in Flagstaff. My.
Yeah, well, I had we looked at the house. We looked at housing over that weekend, Saturday and
In
Sunday,
Missouri.
and then when we left, I told them I'd let them know by Tuesday,
Wow.
and
Got the call on.
we got the call, and I flew out on Monday, and then called Muriel from the airport on the way home and said from the Flagstaff Airport, which was quite different than it is now, said, "I think this looks like the place."
Nice. And so then.
So then I called Springfield, Missouri, and told them that we were not coming.
Okay. And so when did you both then end up moving actually into Flagstaff?
June of 1967.
Okay.
We were driving across country, heading towards Flagstaff, when some Mexican people were having some kind of a revolt in northern New Mexico, and it was making national news. We came through the Four Corners, but we didn't really get into New Mexico. We drove through Colorado.
We were pulling a little trailer of belongings, and we got a motel in Flagstaff that night. And when we got up the next morning, we bought a newspaper. Well, no, before we ever got there, we knew that Glenn Reed, remember our friend from Grand Canyon, was teaching at Flagstaff. And we got in touch with him and had him and his wife Gail send us newspapers from Flagstaff so we could start getting acquainted with Flagstaff before
Oh,
we got there.
nice.
And we could tell by looking at the advertisements for homes that the market was going to be tight. And when we got up, we arrived on a Friday night, and when we got up on Saturday morning, we bought a newspaper, or we drove around town trying to find a realtor's office, and they were all closed. And Mike looked at me and said, "This is a seller's market." And it was shocking because we had found a lovely home in Springfield, Missouri, brand new. We could even pick out how we wanted the yard done, the landscaping, upstairs, downstairs, a basement. It included in appliances for,
Wow.
I think it was like 15,
17 5.
17.5.
Okay.
And we bought a home on Walker Street. I mean, we the realtor, it was interesting, Tom. When I can only remember the name of the realtor now, but we were riding around with him in the car. We had a son, and I was pregnant. Jimmy was two. And he said, "Where should we start, Mr. Canaan?" And he said, Mike said, "Well, what would you suggest?" And he said, "Well, what do you do for a living?" And when Mike told him he was teaching, "Oh, well, then you'll want to live on the west side of Flagstaff. You'll want to live over in Coconino Estates or up on Cherry Hill." And he drove us around and showed us the homes. He says, "That's where the professional people live. And that's where the professors and the doctors." And Mike and I kind of looked at each other and didn't say anything to him. He showed us around a little bit that day, and we said we'd get back in touch with him. We called him again and said we weren't ready to work with a realtor yet. We decided to do it on our own because we kind of looked at each other and said, if all the professionals live in this part of town, maybe we'd be happier in the other side. Because we're basically socialists. And so we just started driving ourselves around, and we found this house on Walker Street in Upper Greenlaw.
Okay.
It was the last last street going east in Upper Greenlaw. Am I right? East?
Yeah.
that had sidewalks.
Okay.
And we wanted sidewalks.
Nice.
Because I knew I'd want to have the kids roller skate and play.
And how did the house price compare size-wise to Springfield?
The house price was $20,000, and it was smaller, no basement, and no upstairs. It probably had
about 13,000 square feet.
Yeah, about 1,300 square feet.
So
yeah.
Maybe two-thirds the size?
About that, yeah.
And it wasn't brand new.
Okay.
And it didn't have a very nice yard.
Interesting, because this is 1967, and in 2019, it's still the case. It was a case when my wife and I purchased a house here next to the Sanders on Navajo in the 1990s. It's just fascinating to see some things that way, not quite changing.
Well, and what we were able to, we built onto our home in Flagstaff the last 20 years because we built a pipe organ into our home, and that's a whole other story. What we were able to sell it for, we were able to come out here and buy a home and have it remodeled with money left over.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Yeah, okay. Well, before I let you go, and this has been a wonderful series of interviews, from 67 until you left Flagstaff, could you recount for me a couple of the more memorable interactions you had at the Grand Canyon during the time when you lived in Flagstaff?
Well, one that comes to my mind, remember we mentioned, didn't we, earlier, the snowstorm that December?
Of 67.
Of 67, yeah.
No, you haven't mentioned that yet, but I certainly know it well.
That was our first fall and in Flagstaff, and we ended up with something like 84 inches of snow in about 8 days. The school didn't want to really release. Back in those days, you had Christmas vacation off, and then you went back after Christmas for the last 2 weeks of classes and then a week of finals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't want to release school, but the storm was just kept snowing.
Yeah.
And it looked like it wasn't going to stop. So they finally released school a day at a time. So they released first Thursday and then Friday. And then over the weekend, they said we won't have any. We were going to have school on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, but they dismissed school for all of that. And then at that point, we drove up to, we got out of the area and away from the snow and drove up to Provo to see Muriel's folks.
Okay.
And we were going to spend Christmas up there. But on the way up on 89, you drive past an area through, what's that called? Not Red Cliffs. What's it called?
Painted Desert.
No, not the Painted Desert. No. It's along 89A between the river and Jacob Lake.
The House Rock Valley, the Vermilion Cliffs.
House Rock Valley, yeah.
Yay, Tom, yay.
So we're driving through House Rock Valley. And after we got up there, we found out that that day, or right around that day, the McElprangs had a family that owned a lot of ranches around in there. And the woman that had married their father did not get along with the children, and the children ended up harassing her. And at that point, I think she ended up killing both of those brothers and then walking out along 89A and hitching a ride up to Jacob Lake.
Okay.
And that was, of course, making big news. And that was their old North Rim family living near there. So
that was a memorable event.
But
a memorable experiences that we had. Where we met family up at the North Rim a number of times.
Nice.
Remember, I had brothers and sisters who worked there. And we met friends up there. And we took friends from Flagstaff and went up and spent time and watched sunsets. And one particular time, we were all out kind of on the rim waiting for the sun to set. And people were laughing and talking, and you could hear the clanking of dishes. They were picnicking and just all human noises.
Mm-hmm.
Human activity noises, and all of a sudden you just became aware that everyone had stopped making any noise. It became very quiet, and we all stood there and watched the sunset.
Wow.
And what point was that on, Mike? Was that on?
Out at
Royal?
No, Cape Royal, yeah.
Cape Royal, yeah.
Nice.
Yes, and then whenever we drove to Utah, which was often over the summer, you know, for summer trips or Christmas, we always tried to go through Jacob Lake and, if at all possible, drive up to the North Rim. And so it was like, it has an extremely special place in our hearts.
Yes, indeed.
And we had a family, eight of us were up there, husbands and wives, just again around 2012, 2013, 2014, I forget. And we watched the moon set on the North Rim.
Wow.
And so it's just,
was wonderful.
We've had wonderful experiences there. And the two reunions we attended of employees. So nice. Lots of memories. We could write a book.
You could, and I would encourage you to do that.
Yeah. And it's been fun reminiscing all of this with you. And we will get all these papers together, Tom, and send to you.
Good. I'd love to see that material. That would be wonderful. Well, with that, maybe this is a good time to go ahead and conclude part three of a wonderful oral history with Mike and Muriel Canaan. Today's Friday, November 1st, 2019. My name is Tom Martin, and Mike and Muriel, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah. And happy November.
Indeed. All right. Hold the line.